David McCallum is perhaps best known for his roles as the Russian secret agent in the television series The Man from U.N.C.L.E. in the 1960s.
I am Ilya Kuryakin. I'm also an enforcement agent. Like my friend Napoleon, I go and I do whatever I am told to by our chief.
And most recently, as the medical examiner, Donald Ducky Mallard on NCIS, which he is still playing in.
Ducky, we need an unofficial mediator.
Did you try Gibbs?
Oh. Yes, I see your point.
We thought of McGee.
But we have no respect for him.
And then we thought of you.
I see. Third on the short list. Well, at least I beat out Abby.
Well, we just came from there.
She turned us down.
Oh.
Come on, Ducky. She's driving me crazy.
Well, I am busy, but,
Abby needs these blood samples, stat.
Yes, as I say, I am busy, but, I'm flattered that you would entrust your relationship to me. It will be rather like, marriage counseling.
Oh, well, let's not use those words.
You can now add to that resume crime fiction novelist. McCallum has written the very entertaining new book, Once a Crooked Man. It's much in the vein of Elmore Leonard and Lawrence Block. Kirkus Reviews has already given it a rave, praising it as a comic thriller, a good-natured debut which gives the reader as good a time as it has plainly afforded its author. It is a great pleasure to welcome the author to our program this morning. David McCallum, thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
A great pleasure for me, too.
So give us a sense of how you came to write this novel.
I was reading a book on tape, probably close to 15, 16 years ago, about Jack Higgins' novel with all the voices and all the different characters. And I was looking at the page, and I remember thinking, you know, I could do this. I've never really learned how to write. So I went home, I went into my little study, and I sat down, and I started writing. And I wrote about an actor who comes across $1 million in a suitcase. It was just a premise, an idea. And to cut a very long story short, over the years, it became an exercise in learning to write. I would take it out, put it in a drawer, add something, have an idea. And the whole thing grew. Sometimes it was in the drawer for 3 years. I mean, it wasn't a continuous effort on my part. And then about 4 years ago, while doing NCIS, I had some time off from cutting and dicing. And I decided that I'd take it out and finish it, which I did. I got a good response from a couple of people who then made me finish it as it is today. And I got myself a literary agent, and then she found a publisher, and there's the book. So the whole thing is serendipitous. I never intended to write a book. But all of a sudden, not only have I written a book, it has got this extraordinary critical acclaim across the country and in Europe and other places. And all of a sudden, instead of just being an actor playing a pathologist, I'm a published author. And I tell you, it's very surprising.
So tell us a little bit about the stories, because we learn about the Bruschetti brothers who are in this lucrative crime underworld, and then enter an actor from New York by the name of Harry Murphy, who overhears what the brothers are up to, and then you have quite a comic thriller on your hands.
Yes, that's basically the premise. It's Bruschetti, by the way. The Bruschetti brothers. One of the other things I thought of very early on is I realized in talking to law enforcement agencies and agents that crime does in fact pay if you don't get caught. So all of a sudden, there I was writing about bad guys who don't get caught. I know in the old days you weren't allowed to do this. You know, your villain had to be caught and all that. But in this case, the Bruschettis are successful, in that no one has ever heard of them, their family, which has been in the crime business for years and years and years. And then along comes this actor who's played a lot of villains. You know, I mean, he's played gangsters. And when he hears the conversation between them, that it looks as if they're going to kill somebody and he might be able to stop it, he decides to interfere. And, of course, therein lies the tale. And there are many, many characters that come into Harry's life as a result of his interference.
including a special agent.
Yeah, one or two special agents, and more importantly, there's a woman from when he's in London. He's approached by a detective sergeant, female, who is somewhat unusual, shall we say, not on the beaten track of what you would expect from that kind of individual.
What's fun to read about in the story is how this character, Harry, is really so much in over his head.
Well, yes. I mean, it's not a farce, although someone has described David McCallum as a farceur, which I consider a huge compliment. But at the same time, I did a play once upon a time called Run for Your Wife by Ray Cooney, the character in that is a taxi driver that keeps two homes and two wives going. So his whole life is making up lies and stories in order to cover from one to the other. And the play goes along till the very end when he tries to explain it, and nobody believes him even at the end. And Harry, to a certain extent, is the kind of individual that comes up with great ideas to cover up difficult situations. And they begin to mount. And, of course, as they mount, his life gets more and more complicated.
Is it inevitable that you start thinking in this way when, as you say, you're reading these books on tape, but also you are in a series that has a mystery element to it each week in, week out, that by osmosis you start thinking about this kind of stuff?
Well, not really. They're not connected. But my father, way back in the 30s, was a member of the Detection Club, which was like Book of the Month Club, except they were detective stories. And all of the writers used to meet at the Savoy Hotel wearing white tie and tails. And it was a very special occasion. And Edgar Wallace, Freeman's Wills Crofts, all of the famous crime writers, Agatha Christie, would all meet for dinner. And one of the things, the perks of all that, was that he got the books through the mail, and they were all on the shelves in the living room. And it's a very, very young, they were some of the first books I ever read. And then we had the Strand magazine, which published the Sherlock Holmes stories, and I read those with great enthusiasm. So I think my background in the back of my mind when it comes to literary fiction is definitely based in the mystery story and the whole idea of detectives solving wild and woolly problems.
What has it been like for you as an actor to have this steady work of NCIS, to have a show that has been on for so long, and to be part of an ensemble, and to really have something like this that is such a staple on television for so long?
Well, you missed out one element. When I got the job, I was 70. I'm now in my 83rd year, and I can assure you that having that kind of steady employment at my age is quite extraordinary. The idea of being in a number one show, even when we're close to 300 episodes, and we're still number one in so many parts of the world, it just goes to show what an extraordinary group of people, and that includes every member of the crew and all the actors who come and go. It is a wild and extraordinary experience. And, it's almost theatrical companies, be theater or television, when they work over a long period of time, become very close. We are an extraordinarily close family. And Mark Harmon is wonderful in that he is, he's the kind of guy that if you were in the Army or the Navy or whatever, you'd want him as your leader. He is an extraordinary leader of men and women, and he has been, to a great extent, responsible for keeping what good old Don Belisario created 13 years ago.
And, of course, you had a very successful career on television prior to that, but with A Man from U.N.C.L.E. and a very successful program in the 1960s for several seasons.
Yes. To have two number one shows in one lifetime is really, people are quite envious of my career. But that's the way it just turned out. And over the years, working with Joanna Lumley in England on a series called Sapphire and Steel, which has become, in its odd way, a cult program, and other things, you know, when you've been doing it. I joined Equity in 1946, and I've been a professional actor basically since I was 12, 13 years old, because I started with BBC Radio, actually doing radio. So you've met a lot of people, you've done a lot of things, and there's an awful lot of work out there.
When Man from U.N.C.L.E. ended, were you looking for another series, or did you want to do something completely different?
When Man from U.N.C.L.E. ended, my desire was, you know, I during that time, we were the flavor of the month. So you couldn't really go for a walk in a crowded street. You were so well known that, I mean, I had mounted policemen rescue me from Central Park. And I was mobbed in a Louisiana school. I hid in the toilet. Actually, it was the ladies' room. The policeman pushed me into the ladies' room and says, "Wait in there." And they came in through the windows. And I was trying to get out of the toilet, and he was trying to stop other people getting in through the toilet. So, you know, it was a very unpleasant situation. And all of that madness, which now is completely gone, I think, well, to a great extent. Sorry, I'm mixing my metaphors. But anyway, nowadays, people do the internet, and you have all Facebook and everything, and I think a great deal of that energy goes into the internet. Whereas in those days, it was on one-to-one and physical. So when U.N.C.L.E. ended, I really wanted to get rid of all that, and I went back to London. Where did I go? I went to New York. Yes, I left Hollywood, went to New York with Catherine, and we had a family, and I did a great deal of theater in New York, but it was a different career altogether. But here we are, 50 years exactly, no, 51 years later, and we're still talking about it.
And now, of course, this career includes novelist, and the new book is Once a Crooked Man. I have interviewed many a novelist, a mystery novelist, and they say once you do one, you're almost obliged to do the second, I assume.
Well, they're talking about a series. I'm sorry,
go.
It's like the Rocks, all the kids that get together, and for 15 years they play, well, whatever, and eventually they put out a hit album, and the record company says, all right, we need another one, but this time you've got, you know, 6 months. The idea of writing a second novel. Now, I've learned the craft to a great extent. And I obviously, somewhere in the back of my mind, there's another book, because I've proved I can do it once, you can do it again. But I feel a little bit like Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill. You know, I'm not quite sure if I can make it. But I'll do my best.
Well, the name of the novel is Once a Crooked Man. It is published by Minotaur Books. David McCallum, thank you so much for spending time with us. What a great pleasure.
It's a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, Once a Crooked Man by David McCallum, out from Minotaur Books.
Gibbs, what did Ducky look like when he was younger?
Ilya Kuryakin.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.